The economy is in crisis. Unemployment is rising. Families are hurting. Despite recent drops in oil prices, the days of cheap gas and oil are gone forever. Climate change calls for massive changes in the way we supply and use energy. And today's guest sees these crises are all connected. And more than that, he believes that together they present an enormous opportunity. Van Jones, a young, dynamic, charismatic, eloquent, optimistic, solutions-oriented African-American with an Ivy League law degree. Boy, does that sound familiar. Well, Van Jones is the founder and president of Green for All and the author of The Green Collar Economy. A new report just released by the U.S. Conference of Mayors says that we can create over 4 million green jobs if we aggressively shift away from traditional fossil fuels toward alternative energy and a significant improvement in energy efficiency. Another report just released by the Political Economy Research Institute and the Center for American Progress shows that the U.S. can create 2 million jobs over 2 years by investing $100 billion in a green economic recovery plan. The report also shows that this investment would create 4 times more jobs than spending the same amount of money within the oil industry. Green for All and its partners are proposing a clean energy core that includes a revolving loan fund to finance the ambitious retrofitting of the nation's buildings. An investment of less than $3 billion per year would provide financing and can be expected to create close to 120,000 green jobs a year, 600,000 over 5 years, while also lowering home heating and building heating and electricity bills for homeowners and small businesses. Van Jones is the founder and president of Green for All, a national advocacy organization based in Oakland, California, committed to building an inclusive green economy strong enough to lift millions of people out of poverty. He also co-founded the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights and Color of Change. And both of those organizations are committed to equal justice and opportunity for low-income people and people of color. He's earned many honors, including the 1998 Reebok International Human Rights Award, the International Ashoka Fellowship, selection as a World Economic Forum Young Global Leader, Rockefeller Foundation Next Generation Leadership Fellowship, and Campaign for America's Future Paul Wellstone Award in 2008. He's a senior fellow with the Center for American Progress, and his first book, The Green Collar Economy, is a New York Times bestseller. Welcome again, Van Jones.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Okay, thank you for finding the time. As you may know, I like listeners to get a feel for the people behind the work and the ideas that we talk about. So I know you've told the story before, but you have an interesting path. Can you tell just briefly how someone like yourself ends up doing the work you're doing today?
Well, I got out of law school and moved to the Bay Area for love at the time. It lasted about 3 weeks, and then I had to find something to do with my time. And I had a law degree, and I was 24 years old, and, you know, dreadlocks and African-American, so pretty obvious that I needed to take on police brutality and take on the criminal justice system, which I did with fervor, helped to build the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights, Bay Area Police Watch, books, Notch Bars, and other groups. But I really burned out, and it was just too many funerals, too many bad court cases, just, you know, too many frustrating meetings with the activist world, and decided to try to get my health together, and discovered in Marin County all of this green stuff, you know, salads and tofu and hybrid cars and solar panels and all kind of stuff, you know, that they kind of wasn't in Oakland and wasn't in Bayview Hunters Point, and decided that all this green, healthy, good stuff was going to represent a huge shift in the economy toward clean energy, toward poison-free food and all that great stuff. And I wanted to make sure we did not have eco-apartheid, with some communities having being the ecological haves and some communities being the ecological have-nots. And came up with the slogan, Green Jobs, Not Jails, back in 2001.
That's good to note.
Yeah. And it was going around trying to get people to look at the green economy as the next source of, you know, basically a civil rights stand for equal protection from the worst of the pollution, poison-based economy, equal protection from the worst of global warming, but also equal opportunity and equal access to the best of the green solutions. You know, let's make sure that Solar panels don't put themselves up. Let's make sure that people who need jobs can get jobs and entrepreneurial opportunities and ownership opportunities and inventor opportunities in solving these problems and fight pollution and poverty at the same time.
Okay. And let me ask, you've been working on these issues, as you say, with this vision. You point out Green Jobs, Not Jails in 2001. I believe I first saw you at the Shadow Convention in 2000, and you were just on the cusp of this kind of thinking. You've been talking about it. You've been starting organizations. You wrote a book, and then this huge global financial crisis come along. How do you feel that this financial crisis affects the vision of what you're proposing?
Well, it makes it that much more urgent and, frankly, that much more doable. Now, I think that this breakdown, it's awful. It's tragic and inevitable. We got sold a bill of goods that for the past 30 years, 20 years, both political parties, don't put it on George Bush, both political parties said we could run the U.S. economy on consumption, not production, on debt.
Right, not, on credit cards.
Exactly, on credit cards. Not thrift and smart savings like our grandparents, but, we could stack the whole economy up on credit cards. And that we could run the economy based on environmental destruction, not environmental restoration. Well, that, by definition, is an unsustainable pathway, which means it had to come to an end. It has now come to an end. We are going to have to find a new way to power the U.S. economy, and my argument would be, let's stop borrowing from overseas, let's start building here again, let's stop relying on overseas credit, let's start relying on our own creativity, and move forward. And the smartest thing that we can do at this point is to rely on some good old, use with your listeners some fancy terminology, green Keynesianism. We need to engage in some deficit spending on the part of the government to get us through this recession, but let's not do the kind of stupid stimulus we just did over the summer where we pass out these, checks to everybody. Everybody runs down to Walmart, buys a flat-screen TV. You stimulated the economy in China, but not here.
Yeah.
Let's instead use that money to invest in greening our infrastructure, retrofitting millions of buildings, that's millions of jobs, putting up millions of solar panels, creating wind farms, fixing our power grid. These are the kinds of things that will cut carbon, cut our energy prices, make us more self-sufficient with regard to energy, bring our home values up through weatherization, bring jobs up. There is a Green New Deal that we can cut to get us through this recession, frankly, depression, the same way we used the old New Deal to get us through the last one.
Is the book available as a download?
It's not. It's the old school. You got to invest in cutting down trees to get it.
and it did open as a New York Times bestseller the week it came out.
It did, in fact. But let me tell you why. And I think this is very important. We didn't have a huge advertising budget. I wasn't on the Oprah Winfrey show. I didn't buy an infomercial. We sent out emails to other activist organizations, to our friends, students that I had been privileged to speak to, and they sent it out, this email saying, hey, we've got a book coming out. If this book gets on the New York Times bestseller list, it would be the first African-American ever to write a book about the environment or about energy ever to get on the New York Times bestseller list. And it just caught on. And ordinary folks, good activists all around the country said, we're going to make this happen. We're going to shatter the emerald ceiling
right.
of publishing and get an African-American environmental writer on the New York Times. So it was a collective victory. Literally millions of emails wound up getting sent out from many, many organizations. And it's a huge accomplishment for this movement. And what it shows is that there's an invisible network of networks that's already ready, in position to support the next Congress and the next president to take bold action, a network that can lift up literature, can lift up laws and lawmakers, and that's what the success of this book indicates.
And I'm reminded, as you were speaking there, of a mutual friend of ours, Paul Hawken, and his book, Blessed Unrest, in which he talked about the power of this movement that hasn't yet recognized its power.
Right. And The exciting thing, Paul Hawken, one of my mentors, and his organization is actually the fiscal sponsor for Green for All. And he pointed out before anybody else, there is a movement bigger than any movement that we've ever seen before. It just doesn't have a name. It doesn't have one leader. It is a network of networks. What we've proved is that that movement is strong enough to catapult a first-time author, basically an unknown author, with a very strange book, a black guy writing a strange book, to the middle of the New York Times bestseller list. That is just the beginning. Wait until next year when this movement actually picks up the U.S. government and puts it down on the side of the people.
Yes. Now, that thing that we talked about a couple of moments ago, this green infrastructure stimulus package, I'm curious because obviously it's they passed, as you point out, there was the initial stimulus package, which was just the rebate checks. Then there was the Wall Street bailout, which keeps going through permutations and actually improving after its passage, which is we should always be so lucky. But there's now talk that this hasn't done enough. And we've got to, because the banks are holding on to some of to most of the money that we lent them or we gave them in terms of buying part of them. And instead of, there was no rule in that bailout package that said they had to lend that money, so they're holding on to it. But there is talk of an infrastructure stimulus, of a jobs program. Are you or any of your allies involved in those discussions with the goal of making this not only happen, but be green?
Well, absolutely. That's why I got these bags under my eyes. that's all we're doing. And I'm so proud to be a senior fellow with the Center for American Progress, which, as you pointed out, with allies put out the Green Recovery Report. I encourage everybody to go download that. After you buy my book, go download the free Green Recovery Report, which is
from the website of Center for American Progress.
You can just Google Green Recovery, it pops right up, or use a search engine for Green Recovery, it pops right up. The reality is that for teeny-weeny modest investments compared to the $1 trillion we just created for the banks, $100 billion, we can create 2 million jobs in the next 2 years. Now, when you're losing 100,000, jobs here and 50,000 jobs there, you can start putting the brake on that by creating new jobs. And these are not Buck Rogers jobs. These are not, sci-fi, George Jetson jobs nobody's ever heard of. What you're talking about are, imagine Joe Sixpack with a green hard hat on and work boots going out to retrofit America. You're talking about hand drills. You're talking about caulk guns.
Right. I listened to one of your other interviews recently, and it was you mentioned put down the gun, pick up the caulking gun.
Well, yeah, put down the handgun, pick up the caulking gun. But the reality is that we've got to give people different icons of this. This is not your grandmama's environmental movement, God bless her and God bless that, but this is about sleeves rolled up, dirt under the fingernails, work boots, Rosie the Riveter, not making tanks to fight wars, but making wind turbines and solar panels so we can avoid wars, and putting the country back to work, retrofitting and repowering this country so that we're clean, that we have a clean energy grid that can connect our clean energy power centers. We have a Saudi Arabia of wind in the middle of our country, in the Plain States. We've got a Saudi Arabia of solar in the Sun Belt. The problem is we just don't have a way to connect our clean energy power centers to our population centers. Well, that should be the big project over the next 10 years to build a clean energy digitized smart grid to get clean energy electrons from our power centers to our population centers. People can then retrofit their cars and plug them in. And you literally are running the country off of wind, sunlight, geothermal. The country that does that first will have the strongest economy in the world, will lead the way to reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And then that is a full employment program like you've never heard of, because you've got to, in order to make it work, retrofit literally every building in this country. You can put everybody to work with hammers and nails and clean green insulation. There is a way out of this recession. There's a way to beat global warming. There's a way to beat poverty, and it's called a Green New Deal.
Yeah, and one of the things that you, I've heard you say that people may not have heard in that, but think about it. If you're talking about retrofitting, it's one thing when we're talking about building the turbines and so on. Those, maybe you could build the components elsewhere, but when you talk about retrofitting every building in this country, that cannot be outsourced.
Exactly right, and the good thing about that is, you put the solar panels on top, You blow in that green insulation. You replace those old inefficient boilers with the new kind. You double pane that glass. That's skilled labor. That's union jobs. That's pathways out of poverty. And you say, well, you can't. Well, sure, but how are you going to pay for it? You can't afford to pay for that. We're broke. You can't afford not to do it.
That's right.
Because you and the energy savings, it pays for itself in 2 to 4 years with most buildings. So what you're talking about is doing something that not only is revenue neutral, revenue positive, and guess what? Those peaker plants that have to, you know, go overtime in the summer, overtime in the winter, also contribute to asthma. Now you're saving on health bills, you're saving on asthma inhalers for children, and you're cutting global warming. Now, I mean, I don't want to be Pollyanna here, but it looks to me like there's a win-win-win solution here that gets the economy going, that gets us out of some of these oil wars. Maybe then we can bring home some of these troops who are not only just fighting in Iraq, but also are policing oil lines all over the world.
Yeah.
The way to peace is the way it is. First of all, let's get we can have peace on Earth if we have peace with the Earth, and that requires that we work together to get a more clean and green agricultural and energy and water system in this country. And you can put the whole country to work. You can empty out the prisons, let the prisoners and the prison guards come home, get some healing, and put them to work, and you're still going to have labor demand.
Yeah, I think as you were listing the connections here, it's one of the things that I love about the synthesis that you're putting forward. You know, as I say at the top of the show, I'm looking at a world that just might work. And, you know, you said win, win, win. It seems to me, actually, this one is about 8 wins all tied together, right? It's the outsourcing one. It's the poverty one. It's the energy one. It's the climate change one. It's the national security one. Well, I mean, it's just...
Sure, and it goes on. And part of the reason is if you want to have a green economy... It's fine to have a green economy in which you have no throwaway species or no throwaway resources.
Yeah.
But you'd also have no throwaway children or neighborhoods or nations or people. And that is where you actually get the country you've always wanted. You get the movement that you've always wanted, because it's through the door of the green economy that you're going to have to break up with oil. You're going to have to break up with coal. Well, if you break up with those two things, well, you may as well go ahead and break up with racism and discrimination as well, because that's a big change. Now, you may as well build a green economy that Dr. King would be proud of. I mean, if your grandma's not making it, your dad's not making it. We're going to create in our lifetimes a green economy powered by clean energy, and support it with less poison on the agricultural side, smarter on water, smarter on materials. We're going to create that. Well, why not create it with our values of equal opportunity and inclusion and anti-poverty and social uplift baked in from the very beginning? And we say, the people who are being thrown away into prisons, no. We're not just going to have a green economy based on reclaiming thrown away stuff.
Right.
We're going to have a green economy also based on reclaiming thrown away lives, thrown away communities, thrown away people, because our fundamental belief has to be that we are all in this together going forward. Repowering this country is going to require an all hands on deck, and that's how you get. We can't be the world leader in the green economy, and then in California be spending a dime out of every dollar trying to be the world leader in the gulag economy.
Right.
We've got to move forward together.
Let me shift. I hope we've laid that wonderful vision down. And while it's a huge vision, as you think about it, as you pick up the book and read about it, you'll see it's a huge vision. But it's little things, and it's little things that make sense. Let me turn, if I may, to the upcoming presidential election. As you heard in the intro, I find, you know, there are similarities between you and the candidate for president. What does it feel like for you, Van, a week in front of that election?
Well, you know, I'm inspired. I'm excited. You know, I did not expect to have, I mean, for instance, when Senator Obama walked out on stage to accept the nomination of his party, first African American to do so, you know, he'd wrapped up the election for, you know, months and months. I expected to, you know, watch it and, you know, analyze it and critique it, and I found myself in tears. To my own surprise. To see him walk out and to say that's 500 years, and for the first time there's a balm on it's a small bomb. It doesn't erase the past, doesn't fix the present, but it means the future might be different. And and I think that we need to take that moment Tuesday, Wednesday, maybe even Thursday, and celebrate. And then we have to accept responsibility for the first time, at least in my lifetime. We can't just win next Tuesday. We've got to win every day after that for the next 4 years, the next 8 years, the next 16 years, because the president cannot fix everything. And in fact, I don't even want a president to try to fix everything. I just want a president that's going to stop breaking everything. You know, that's the only break that we need. And then let us begin to fix it. And so there is a danger, I think, that we will look at Barack Obama and say, well, what is he going to do? My hope is that we will look at Barack Obama and say, well, he did his part. Now what are we going to continue to do together? There yeah. should be an engagement dividend. More people, somebody says it may not be true, but I'm going to keep saying it until somebody proves me wrong. Apparently, more people watch the vice presidential debate than were watching American Idol recently.
Right.
Now, that's never happened. You can go to barbershops now, regular old places. People talked about dividends and derivatives and all kind of fancy. Because now, in 2008, the American people finally woke up. Politics matter. The economy matters. People are asking tough questions. That engagement dividend, the payoff of having people participate in these discussions and these debates and the election, should give us a forward-going basis to have a real democracy for the first time, at least in my lifetime in this country. Barack Obama can enable that, but his election doesn't substitute for that. It opens the door to that for the rest of us.
Yes, and one thing that I've pointed out many times here, and we're going to refer back to the New Deal, is Franklin Roosevelt ran on a fairly moderate platform. It was after he won the election that the people, the labor unions, the farmers and so on,
and the anarchists and the communists, and the
as a national movement, descended on Washington and held his feet to the fire.
Right.
And it was, and I always, during the Clinton years, said, we're not doing that to Bill Clinton. He was allowed to triangulate because the people sat back and weren't a force for accountability. And that's what you're calling for if we are lucky enough that Barack Obama is elected president.
And I'm taking it one step further than that, even, in that there's a way that you could say, well, we're going to hold this guy accountable. And on the left, that often means we're going to protest him, we're going to kick him accountable, we're going to punch him accountable, we're going to cuss him accountable.
Right.
And what I think we need to do is actually hold him and keep him accountable.
Embrace him accountable.
Exactly. And what that requires is understanding that the logic of the presidency is his job is to go in there and disappoint the right constituencies in the right order so he can be reelected. That's his job. It's our job to make sure that our constituencies are not first in line for the disappointment. And we do that by not pushing him around, but by pulling the country forward, by doing those things at the local level. If Congress wants to debate climate endlessly, let's keep charging ahead at the city level and creating green jobs. Let's use our utilities to come up with creative ways to finance the retrofits if Congress won't do it. And you just keep pushing and you keep pushing. Let's insist that our local schools have 25% local organic food, and you create an instant market locally for organic food. Let's push and push at the local level and Congress and the new president.
I've got to let you go. So again, the book is The Green Collar Economy. The websites are vanjones.net and greenforall.org. You can email me at temcnally@mac.com if you want voter protection information, or if you want to learn more about the show, my website, the podcast, or get on my weekly list for announcements telling you who's going to be on and what we're going to talk about. Thank you, Van Jones. Keep up the good work.